The Door in the Wall by H.G. Wells. One
confidential evening, not 3 months ago, Lionel Wallace told me his story of the door in the wall. And at the time, I thought that, so far as he was concerned, it was a true story. He told it me with such a direct simplicity of conviction that I cannot do otherwise than believe in him. But in the morning, in my own flat, I woke to a different atmosphere. And as I lay in bed and recalled the things he had told me, stripped of the glamour of his earnest, slow voice, denuded of the focused, shaded table light, the shadowy atmosphere that wrapped about him, and the pleasant, bright things, the dessert and glasses and napery of the dinner we had shared, making them for the time a bright little world quite cut off from everyday realities. I saw it as frankly incredible. It was mystifying, I said. And then, how well he did it. It isn't quite the thing I should have expected him, of all people, to do well. Afterwards, as I sat up in bed and sipped my morning tea, I found myself trying to account for the flavor of reality that perplexed me in his impossible reminiscences by supposing that they did in some way suggest, present, convey, I hardly know which word to use, experiences it was otherwise impossible to tell. Well, I don't resort to that explanation now. I have got over my intervening doubts. I believe now, as I believed at the moment of telling, that Wallace did to the very best of his ability strip the truth of his secret for me. But whether he himself saw, or only thought he saw, whether he himself was the possessor of an inestimable privilege, or the victim of a fantastic dream, I cannot pretend to guess. Even the facts of his death, which ended my doubts forever, threw no light on that. That much the reader must judge for himself. I forget now what chance comment or criticism of mine moved so reticent a man to confide in me. He was, I think, defending himself against an imputation of slackness and unreliability I had made in relation to a great public movement in which he had disappointed me. But he plunged suddenly. "I have," he said, "a preoccupation. I know," he went on, after a pause that he devoted to the study of his cigar ash. "I have been negligent. The fact is, it isn't a case of ghosts or apparitions, but it's an odd thing to tell of, Redmond. I am haunted. I am haunted by something that rather takes the light out of things, that fills me with longings." He paused, checked by that English shyness that so often overcomes us when we would speak of moving or grave or beautiful things. "You were at St. Athelstan's all through," he said, and for a moment that seemed to me quite irrelevant. "Well," and he paused. Then, very haltingly at first, but afterwards more easily, he began to tell of the thing that was hidden in his life, the haunting of a beauty and a happiness that filled his heart with insatiable longings, that made all the interests and spectacle of worldly life seem dull and tedious and vain to him. Now that I have the clue to it, the thing seems written visibly in his face. I have a photograph in which that look of detachment has been caught and intensified. It reminds me of what a woman once said of him, a woman who had loved him greatly. 'Suddenly,' she said,